I mean, I remember this occasion, and I think I mentioned this to you once before, and I'm not sure you remember it even, but you you unloaded a truckload of horse manure outside the Douglas Gallery.
Inside
the Douglas Gallery.
During an opening. Bob Arnold and I took 50 pounds of steer manure to an opening at the Douglas Gallery.
What was all that about? What was the opening?
Well, it coincidentally, it was very, very interesting. A guy had done some paintings, and the paintings weren't stretched. They were attached to the wall with the kind of nails they put horses' hooves on, or horseshoes on horses' hooves, sort of spiky things that are tapered. Just banged these things into the wall. And Doug had made a big move in the scene in the 66, 67 area. He went around to people like me, and before we were having our first exhibitions, and saying that he was putting this special collection of Canadian art together, and that he wanted to buy this and that and the other thing, but because it wasn't happening through a gallery, he should get it at a substantially reduced rate. So I was a victim of that. And then, of course, within a couple of years, these things that he claimed were going to be in the special collection, they're on the market. Bullshit. Right? So I was telling Bob about this one day. No, I don't think it happened that way. Now I think back, Bob just said one day, I'd really like to fill a gallery with bullshit. And I said, well, now that you mention it, so would I. And I have the place in mind, because I felt pretty burned by how Christmas had treated me. And so we just found out when there was going to be an opening, and we had no idea what it was or who it was or anything, and we just arranged to wear clothing which would allow us to have a whole bunch of steer manure in baggies, and we just stand around talking to people, and we'd reach in our pocket and go behind our back like our arms were just folded behind our back, and we'd be dropping this baggie full of manure on the ground. And then this little helper that Doug had,
So you'd open the bag.
Yeah, we'd just drop it out and then fold up the bag and put it back in our pocket. And when we ran out, we'd go back to the truck and fill up some more baggies. And stuff is showing up on the floor in relation to these things that it kind of looks like a barn with these horse hoof nails, horseshoe nails driven into the wall to hang these pieces of canvas that had just kind of had paint sloshed on them. And
so who blew the whistle?
Well, what?
Beautiful. So
the Christmas gallery bullshitting.
Right.
Yeah. What I recollect most clearly, because for me it was the funniest, was this stuff starting to show up in little piles on the floor, and the gallery administration beginning to notice, and there was this little helper-outer of Doug's, prim little lady, pink dress. She showed up with this dustpan on a stick and a little broom, and she was going around like sweeping all this up. They had no idea. And of course, she'd no longer get it all swept up and find somewhere to put it and come back, and it's back, right? And how they figured it all out was my brother was involved. He got carried away. He got into their washroom and started plastering it on the mirror and plugging up the sink with it. And, it became obvious in terms of who is behind all this. So that's how it played out. Uh-huh.
So what did Doug do about this? Did he?
Well, he went out to the truck and found what was left of the bag of 50-pound bag of steer manure and smeared it all over my steering wheel and dashboard. You know, he got his licks in. So he counter-pranked.
And there was no publicity apart from that?
Well, I mean, we didn't do anything but what we did, and then we went away.
Right.
We just wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm. Was that the beginning of the Oshkosh-type overalls, the striped working outfit that you and...
No, I don't think that was the beginning. It was part of it, but I don't know where they started, really.
So that was a worker's kind of...
Yeah, very much. We also took what was left of the steer manure down to the what do they call that when they christen a new building? It was the building down at Hastings and Burrard, and it had a fountain, and they'd flown in 50 carp from Japan to put in this pond, and of course they weren't going to live. And Bob and I stayed up real late one night with tape recorders and recorded all these horrendous sounds of motorcycles revving and people laughing. And Bob and myself, I remember Glenn Topping, so it was probably two or three other people, we all had tape recorders, and we took them down there and started playing back these awful tapes while all these speeches are being written, read. And I think the last final gesture was we took what was left of the steer manure, about 20 pounds of it, I guess, and just took it and put it in front of the podium and just left. You know, I think we did a little bit of publicity for that one. I think we used the word gorilla like the monkey. Gorilla art. We'd gone apeshit.
Really?
That kind of thing. And it was a protest about these fish, you know. The fountain was ugly. And it was architect designed and ghastly. And then all these fish were going to be sacrificed to the name of this new building. We thought that really sucked. I think it was Glenn who initiated that, actually. We said, we have just the thing, Glenn. We have the bag of steer manure left over from this other project. I remember one guy standing next to Bob, and he said, if you don't turn that off, I'm going to throw it in that water. And Bob just said, go ahead and I'll sue you. He was so cool. So, yeah, the other interventions were, I think, the kind of energy that Bob Arnold brought to Vancouver, you know. And his interest in the box and my interest in the isometric cube. And then all those silly performance things we did with boxes. And then the exhibition out in Stratford. He just brought a lot of that kind of out-of-the-box, no puns intended, out-of-that-box kind of thinking about sculpture and the body. And we just sort of clicked. I mean, we just had a real kind of soulmate, blood brother kind of relationship in terms of our interests and shared values. So those interventions, I'm trying to think of others.
Yeah, because things, for instance, like the transporting a truck full of boxes and to the Intermedia building on 4th Avenue, mm-hmm. and then unloading the truck.
Them dressed up as box cartoon characters, yeah. And then making a film of a couple of boxers dressed up in boxes in a boxing ring boxing. I mean, just silly language games, you know. And again, just stuff designed to disassemble the sensibilities of anyone who encountered it.
Yeah, but there was no audience for that. For that intervention, you know, carrying
well, people
them.
Driving by,
right?
Again, just see what happens here, right? Not like what happens today, where like the audience is literally manufactured, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just I just said it's so great not to have signage and just this, all these forces trying to manipulate the audience into a particular relationship with the art, allowing people just to find their own relationship to it. So that was another, I think, idea shared by a lot of us in the early 60s. Don't, you know, let the art manipulate the audience, if you can. Don't do anything else. Just try and manipulate with the art. But don't manipulate them beyond that.
So how did Cheney fit into all of that?
Well, Bob and I had been playing with the boxes, and Bob had a peculiar kind of interest in doing something so environmental that the structures that the boxes were making, in this case, I think they were like 1 foot by 1 foot by 6 feet. And we were putting them together and then gluing them into great big square rings and then making like it was a chain structure with the rings linked together. He wanted to put this into a really, what would you call it, cocooned or enveloped, like envelop that structure in something that minimized everything else around it,
shield.
Or eliminated
it. It was a shield, basically,
wasn't
it?
A shield, yeah. So the idea was to find a place where we could use something neutral, visually neutral, like tar paper, and build the shield or the cocoon out of that, and then just have very, very minimal, simple lighting, and not articulate anything like, you know, these cornfields where they cut mazes through and stuff like that. Not articulate anything formal, like not preconceive a pattern for the forms, but just to build it, we kind of like backed our way out of the space. We started at one end where it ended and just built our way out, leaving, we knew we were leaving spaces where people could, by stepping over, climb into and then experience the peculiar, very peculiar geometry of these objects in this relatively dark but nevertheless lighted environment. It was Bob. That was Bob. And I just said, you know, I think we could talk to Alvin out at Fine Arts Gallery and see what he thinks. You know, would he permit this kind of nonsense to go on inside his space, you know, this travesty of sculpture and environment. And he thought it was great. He was very, very supportive. Very supportive. Bob really liked it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
He really liked doing it, and he really liked the results. He was just absolutely fascinated by this environment and the kind of sensibility you'd have to construct to deal with it. He thought that was really, really important. You know? I mean, I thought it was interesting, but not to the degree he did. I mean, he was really, really into something that he really couldn't verbalize. It was just something very deep and personally subjective and intuitive for him about the body and space, and how space, space imposes itself upon the body, and then the body reacts and or proacts in relationship to those forces, anti-environments. Yeah. Just to completely contradict as much of the given, the taken for granted as possible, and put something else in its place that nobody's ever experienced before.